The season's over, the rest is fine. And I grow colder all the time. But never feeling lonely. Hello, welcome to the Metro West Daily News Podcast. Today is Wednesday, April 19th, and I am your host, Megan Kelly, digital editor for the Metro West Daily News. I'm here with my fellow host, Bill Shaner.
Hey there.
And we have sat down once again with our Framingham reporter, Jim Hadadine, who is wearing his Chucks today. I'm not wearing my Chucks today.
Oh, I'm wearing my Chucks today.
Oh, man, I'm the weak link in this.
Oh, my God. There's always one.
The last time we recorded together, Bill didn't have his Chucks on. We're like the Chucks-wearing people in the building.
It's true.
Anyway, we are here today to talk to Jim about the transition process for Framingham. It voted to become a city, and that, of course, does not mean that you just flip the switch and you're in a city.
Right.
There's a lot of discussion. There's, I'm sure, many committees, lots of bureaucracy. So, Jim, take it away.
Well, thank you for having me. So, yeah, the transition is fascinating process that is spelled out in very concrete detail at the end of the charter. And we're going to get to see how all of that unfolds probably over the next 8 months. So this is with the caveat that there is a recount coming up on Monday.
Yes. Right.
So.
And what was the margin? The margin was like 108 votes?
108 votes. So,
yeah. Out of how many votes?
More than 11,000.
Right.
Which
right.
I guess is, people are saying that's one of the highest turnouts in recent memory for a town election.
Mm-hmm.
Some people were disappointed because obviously you get more people come out and vote for a presidential election or a state level election.
Because it was 28%?
28.4.
Yeah, 28.4%. Yeah,
which actually for a local election is fairly high.
Yeah.
Yeah. The usual number is in the teens.
Yeah. So you
or
know,
below.
yeah. So out of all those people who came out and voted, it was a very close result. And I don't think anyone is really expecting to see that result overturned because the town does have these electronic vote counting machines and they are known to be very reliable, but they're going to go through that process on Monday morning, so we should know by Monday afternoon.
Right.
That's cool. Yeah, 108 is pretty, that's close.
hand count for the recount?
Yes, so everybody's going to get together in Evans Hall at the Memorial Building. As I understand it, we're going to have like 4 or 5 tables where volunteers. This is also interesting. They've got clerks from other parts of the state are volunteering to come in and assist.
Wow.
It's like a brotherhood and sisterhood of town clerks.
yeah.
So they're coming in to, be the official people who look at the ballot and say, this is a yes vote, this is a no vote.
It's like fire department mutual aid.
Yeah, exactly.
when you got a really big, big fire.
Hopefully there'll be no hanging chads. I don't know. Do you get that joke? No, you don't.
Nope.
Do you get that joke?
I do get that joke.
I'm glad
I was
that,
a huge nerd as a kid.
I'm glad that audio doesn't pick up the blank stare that I was just giving Megan. That's
in,
pretty good.
The presidential election of the year, in the year 2000, in the Florida recount, there was a problem with the way that they were voting. They had these cards that they put together with like a hinge, and you had to punch in with like a pencil or a pen. You had to punch in what you were voting for, but
foolproof system.
Yeah,
but some people did not. It did not punch all the way out, so there was literally the paper with the, it was called a chad, a hanging chad, and it's like a really famous photo of a one of the recounters with I think his glasses are on top of his head and he's kind of squinting at this paper and you can see the little piece of paper hanging.
Oh, man.
So yeah,
hopefully there's
I don't
nothing
think
like that.
Be.
So it seems like there's less that's open for interpretation with these ballots, which are just an oval that you fill in.
Right. Thank you, Florida, for paving the way.
yeah.
Being an example of what not to do.
Florida
so
first.
We could still have some ballots that get challenged if there are like stray marks on the ballot or somebody made a dot but didn't fill it in all the way. And then in that case, there's this group of registrars who are picked by the Board of Selectmen who will come in and look and give their expert opinion on what the voter's intent was in that case.
So it's pretty official.
Yeah,
official,
it seems pretty thorough.
Yeah.
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 So I'll be there for all the action on Monday. That should be exciting, but we should know by the end of the day.
So describe the setting of that a little bit. Is it just going to be a big open room with like ballots flying everywhere?
I think it's actually going to be like a fairly quiet process because people, I guess you're actually limited as to who can speak while it's going on.
Oh.
So they're going to like close the doors of Nevins Hall at the Memorial Building.
Oh.
And, you know, you'll have these a few different stations where it's going on.
Okay.
So I don't think it'll be like a high drama atmosphere.
Well, I'd imagine if you're counting, you're like 10, 11, and someone else is shouting, you're like, oh, I lost my count, I gotta do it again.
No counting out loud.
Right.
They bring in like the librarians to enforce the
And, you know, Bill Galvin's office, the Secretary of the Commonwealth, is involved in helping the town do this and make sure everything is done in accordance with the law.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Cool. So then, assuming, I think we can probably safely assume that this is still going to be the way that it was, you know, it's still going to be a city. So then, assuming this all goes through with the recount on Monday, what are the next steps for the municipality?
Yeah. So I think from here we spring forward immediately into election season once again.
Yeah.
We already have, by my count, at least two people who have declared for the new city council and two people.
When would election be?
So the papers, you can pull papers beginning May 1st. Papers are due in July, so we'll know by July who the candidates are. And if necessary, there will be a preliminary election in September. September 26th, and then the election itself is November 7th.
Oh, okay.
So on that day, you'll have the mayor, 11 councilors, and 9 school committee members who will all be elected.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of people to sort out on the ballot.
Fun does not stop in Framingham.
Yeah.
So you said that there have been a couple people, before I very rudely cut you off, that have floated.
People are coming out of the woodwork for it, and I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more about people who are interested. But I think at least two people interested in the city council, two people who declared for the school committee. Yesterday, Matt Murphy from the State House News Service reported that Chris Walsh, the state representative from Framingham, is interested in this opportunity. We, when we had the Charter Commission in here before the election, we spoke to John Stefanini, who was a member of the commission and former state representative and selectman in town. And he said he hasn't made a decision about whether to run, but he would be thrilled to be the mayor of Framingham.
Right.
So he's somebody that I would also expect to, you know, perhaps enter that race.
Interesting.
So one thing that really intrigued me about this whole process was that they were going to base the mayor's salary, correct me if I'm wrong, on the town manager's salary. Is that right?
That is correct.
So it would be the highest paid mayor in the state, something like $188,000 per year. Is there a sense that maybe the first mayor gets that, but then the city council will say, we're going to lower it to kind of be more commensurate with other mayors? Or would you get any sense about how that's going to work?
So that's an interesting question. And I tried to kind of read through the charter and parse how that might work. And the council does have the ability to set the mayor's salary. But the way I read what's in the charter, I think that first opportunity might come after the first term of the first mayor.
Yeah.
So that could put us 4 years down the road before you know, the salary would be adjusted.
So every 4 years they have an opportunity to review that part of the mayor's contract.
As I recall, I mean, it's not that they have to wait 4 years, but it's just that this first term, I don't think they can change it that way just because it's when we're first getting this established. I might be wrong about that.
I mean,
I haven't asked anybody, but
that makes sense, though, that you would say it's kind of like the expectation for the first person running to be the first mayor,
right?
There's an expectation of that, and then you can say, okay, now for subsequent mayors, it's going to be something. It was just, you had a great story on comparing the mayor's average salaries across the state, and it was really surprising to see that the Framingham mayor would make more than Marty Walsh in Boston, or mayors of really big cities like Worcester or Lawrence or Waltham or anything like that. So I'm interested to see how that's going to play out, because that's a high salary.
The factoid I heard getting thrown around the office yesterday was Framingham mayor is going to be the highest paid mayor in the state. Is that something you can confirm? You said it was higher than...
No, it's the highest.
I would say it is most likely the case that it will be the highest paid mayor in the state. What we confirmed through reporting is that when you look at the 20 largest cities in Massachusetts, there is no mayor that would make more than the mayor of Framingham.
Right.
And it's hard to imagine that as you go further down the list, and get into cities with populations of like 50,000, 40,000, they're going to be making more than, you know, like $190,000.
True, true, true.
So I think it's probably the case.
Oh, that's, wow.
Yeah. I mean, unless Marty Walsh was making, I don't remember the exact number, but I mean, he could get a raise, right? Like,
right.
Like he could be the highest paid mayor, but
yeah.
That was the first one that I looked for, was like, wait, so how much is Marty Walsh getting paid?
I wonder if Marty Walsh is looking at that mayor's job.
He wants to be mayor of Boston, but he's mayor of Frank.
Yeah. You know, it's technically, technically a little pay grade. No, I'm just kidding. That wouldn't even be possible. You know, you'd have to be a resident of Framingham, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think the election will drive a lot of the interest in this transition up until January 1st. As a corollary to that, there are kind of more dry things that are going to be happening, looking at the specifics of how you turn town government into a city government and which laws that are local rules that are on the books here in Framingham might need to be amended or revised to comport with the charter or to maybe pick up some of the responsibilities of other parts of government that are going to be lost in the shuffle.
And it's kind of a total like org chart redesign, right? So, I mean, obviously, like the Department of Public Works is still going to be the Department of Public Works, even though it's a city, but isn't there going to be kind of like people are going to have different bosses now that
I think some departments are going to look very much the same as they do now when we make it into the city aspect. Certain others are going to be pretty dramatically reorganized, so you're going to have this new finance division that's going to fold together a lot of the responsibilities that happen in town.
Like treasurer,
I think treasurer is one of them.
Right.
The town accountant is going to be split into a couple different functions, so there's like an auditing function of that and then an accounting function of that.
Okay.
There will be a chief financial officer that's kind of the same position that exists in town now, but that person is going to need to be appointed by the mayor. So that's something that might change. I think everyone's pretty happy with the CFO the town has now, who's got a lot of expertise, so it might be wise to keep that person in that position while you're doing this whole transition. But
are there any hired people who work in town government that, I mean, is there any risk of anyone getting reorged out or getting laid off or anything like that?
Yeah, well, the number one person would be the town manager who is going to find himself out of a job, Bob Halpin.
I just assumed that they would keep a town manager. Is that not the case?
They chose to set up a strong mayor and rather than having a professional manager to handle some of that executive function, it's basically all going to be underneath the mayor to handle that now. So there is no manager that's going to be working with them. The town manager position will cease to exist on January 1st. The charter does specify that the mayor, if he or she chooses, can kind of negotiate a side contract with Bob Halpin, assuming Bob Halpin's still the town manager at the end of this year,
right,
to keep him on in either a temporary or a permanent position. So maybe that's something that the incoming mayor might consider, especially given how much Bob Halpin knows about what's going on in town and in the interest of keeping the ship afloat while they make this bridge this gap.
You might
see that happen.
That is an interesting, I hadn't thought about it that way before, but going from someone who is hired and has no real threat of being bumped out every election cycle, just doing that day-to-day work, versus having your basically CEO of the company have to prove himself or herself via campaigning. That's an interesting shift in the way the dynamics of town hall or city hall now.
Yeah, and that's definitely something people were talking about, in the run-up to the April 4th election, too, and kind of the merits of those two different approaches to doing city government.
Right. I just kind of assumed that, I don't know, I live in Worcester where there's a city manager who has a lot of power and then a mayor who is more like the head of the city council than like the CEO of the company. So it's like not even the same kind of city government.
I live in Waltham. We do have a pretty strong and powerful mayor.
Yeah.
Yeah, she has all her hands. I mean, whether rightly or wrong, I mean, she has her hands in a lot of stuff.
Right.
So, some people really like that. And I one of the things that I totally got with the Charter Commission was them saying, well, now we'll have a face that represents the city, you know, whether that be at the state level or even the national level. And I can get that. Waltham's mayor has been there for a while and everyone knows her, and it's kind of the thing where, yeah, you have a a person that you can, that's like your standard bearer, as it were. So true. I definitely get that. This is the first, I own a house now, so this is the first house I've ever owned, and like the first time I've ever really like paid real estate taxes. So watching this form of government has been different. I didn't grow up
keenly aware.
I grew up in a really I grew up in a really tiny town where we had town meeting, and it was at a not even representative town meeting; it was just regular town meeting. So
But I think that the argument in favor of it is, you know, this person has more power to accomplish what they need to because the people came out and said, we want you to, you know, do this job. Whereas somebody who's appointed by like a board of selectmen, there's less accountability there, the argument goes.
Well, that is, certainly,
you know, you can make arguments for and against.
When are they reprinting the signs?
That's a really good question.
So that's a great question. So one question that occurred to me on election night was like, hey, wait a minute, when does Framingham actually become a city? Like, when do I start writing the city of Framingham in my stories?
Interesting. I didn't even thought about that.
So I still don't have a really clear answer to that question.
Is it when the mayor is elected?
So that's
or is it January 1st?
January 1st is kind of the best answer to that question right now. So the charter technically says that it takes effect, quote, upon its ratification by the voters. So, you know, I could read that to mean that Framingham is right now a city and just hasn't set up, you know, the aspects of city government that accompany that. And if you read the charter, it references, instead of like the town clerk, it now references the city clerk through all these transition things that need to happen between now and January. So in some ways, the charter thinks of the community as a city at this very moment.
Per the vote. So as soon as the recount process is over, you can make the argument.
Right, maybe that's the moment that's ratified.
That Framingham is a city. But how does January 1st come into it?
So I think everyone kind of feels like January 1st is probably the best time to actually think of it as a city, because at noon that day, the mayor, the city council will be sworn in.
Okay.
And so the executive authority becomes vested in the mayor, the legislative authority moves to the new city council, and the kind of like vestiges of town government cease to exist at that moment. So like town meeting, you know, it's like the clock strikes midnight for them on that day, and they're gone. The town manager is gone at that moment.
Yeah.
So are they going to redesign the town seal?
They are going to redesign the town seal.
Wow. Are they going to do it like, they should have like a contest.
I'm just thinking of all the kind of the picayune stuff, like their stationery.
Yeah.
And the patches on the cops' armbands and stuff.
I wonder,
like that.
Do the cops have the town of Framingham Police Department, or is it just Framingham Police on their cars?
I think it's just Framingham, but you know
I think it just says Framingham, but now I'm not sure about it.
Every time I drive around Framingham, I'm going to be looking like, oh, that needs a change. Nope, that needs a change.
So that was a part of the discussion, too, and while the Charter Commission was drafting the charter, like, to what degree do you make the, you know, how quickly does the transition happen, and what is the fiscal impact of that? Because you do need to literally get new business cards and new street
signs.
So the solution they came up with is to say that it needs to be a gradual transition to minimize the fiscal impact. Reading from the charter, it says, the mayor shall assess the fiscal and operational impacts of the change from town to city and work with the city's divisions, departments, boards, and officers to implement this change, including, but not limited to, determining priorities, estimation of expected costs and timeline. And the new seal will be in place by 2020 for the city of Framingham.
Okay,
so they're giving themselves just about 3 years to come up with that perfect design.
Yeah.
I would have thought that they'd want that done by January, but
it's a powerful symbol. You know, it winds up on a lot of things.
But you're right. But I mean, even if they said, you've got to have it by January 1st, you've got to change all the signs, like the street signs. Yeah. You've got to change stationery, business cards, email signatures, the website. Like, there's so much I can see that it's going to take some time. when my dad was working, his companies went from one name to another, and they were actually instructed to throw out everything.
Wow.
Like even the mugs that you had at home. Just throw it out.
That's a dramatic approach.
Yeah. Yes. We should try to find, like, the entering Framingham sign and try to find out when the DPW is going to go over and swap the sign. So it would be, like, the best picture ever. It would be a great centerpiece.
I'll make sure we're on.
I have, like, there's all this serious government stuff going on, and I'm, like, very much concerned about when they're going to change the seal and the signs. And, like, what about signs that are, like, concrete, you know, like yeah, etched into the building?
Recast it.
Yeah, no, oh, man.
I told one of the charter commissioners I will know it's official when they change the Twitter account.
Yeah.
And it's, like, broadcast to the world that's out there.
Yeah, that's funny. So you were at a selectman meeting last night where they kind of laid out their plan for doing sort of the wonkier stuff, right? So how does that look? There's going to be some sort of committee that reviews the org chart, or what's going on there?
So yeah, the really important body that's being established to work through the next 8 months is called the Bylaw Review Committee. So this is a group of 7 people, 2 of whom will be members of the former Charter Commission,
mm-hmm.
You know, a virtue because they know everything about what this charter is supposed to
right.
do. And 5 others who are going to be citizens of Framingham who are, you know, volunteer to serve in this group. And they need to go through all of the town's bylaws and figure out, you know, does this work with what the charter instructs us to do and do we need to tweak anything?
Right.
So they're going to start working in May, and they've got to give recommendations to the new mayor-elect in November after the election is held and we know who that person is. So that, as I said, is probably going to be pretty dry work. You know, it takes a special type of person to go through and do that.
Yeah.
God bless them. I do not. That is not my strong suit, but some people are really excellent at that.
But it is, I mean, it is a really super important role because these people are really going to get into the nitty-gritty of how the town functions and
right.
how that needs to cross over. And they're going to be advising, you know, the new slate of elected leaders that are going to do this. So that's a pretty key role for us.
Yeah.
Does town meeting have to vote to dissolve itself? Like, is there going to be another town meeting?
So town meeting is it's on a set trajectory, and there's really not much it can do about it at this point, from
right.
what I understand. So there is going to be the annual town meeting coming up on starting on Tuesday night. And they have a pretty full slate of articles to get through.
Right.
So
same as if the vote didn't happen, pretty much, right?
So yes and no. There are some things that they're going to do, like the annual budget. It's very clear-cut, and the charter even says, you know, go ahead and do the budget to get us into the new city. But there are other matters that are going to be dropped, or people are going to recommend to send back to the sponsor because it seems like they would kind of countermand the purpose of the charter at this point. So it's kind of interesting to see how that process is playing out.
Hmm.
And it is kind of a gray area,
right.
what it is the town meeting can do at this point. And there's some tension around that as we speak in terms of what is going to be dealt with at a special town meeting coming up and what would be better to just hold off on.
And Framingham is representative town meeting, right?
Yes.
So this must be maybe a bittersweet but heavy on the bitter moment for people in town meeting. Like, are there any people in Framingham that are like really vocal at town meeting that have commented since the vote on how that form of government's going away?
I would say just about everyone at town meeting is very vocal. It's an opportunity for everyone to really have their say on things.
Right.
So I think there are some people who are going to find themselves without the same platform in
right.
municipal government that they had in town meeting, and that will probably be something that they miss after the fact.
That's true.
But it's, you know, you've got a lot of opportunities for people to get involved and serve on these.
City council will be meeting regularly. They can always go and
yeah.
talk there.
Yeah, so
maybe,
it's,
you know, maybe they'll limit citizen participation to 5 minutes or something. Who knows? But yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, there's how many council seats and there's how many town meeting members?
There were 216 town meeting members.
Yeah.
And that's a number that was on track to be cut by 25%.
Okay.
You know, kind of as a last-minute effort to make it more streamlined as this vote was pending. There will only be 11 members of the city council.
So all right. So every town meeting member ran for city council, that would be 11 20-way races. Am I doing the math right?
Depending.
It would be a very... It would be like California's ballot when Arnold Schwarzenegger ran for governor. It was like 200 people ran, I believe, that year. Right. So.
Yeah, it's not likely that'll happen. I'm just thinking about if everyone from town meeting wants to stay involved in the legislative branch of the government as it is. Well, hey, this is a lot of stuff to pay attention to in the town / city of Framingham going forward. So thanks, Jim.
Yeah, this would be cool to watch.
Thanks. What yeah. to talk about.
So now is our Around the Carrick segment where we talk about what we've been watching, reading, listening, engaging with, etc. You know, the kind of stuff that you would talk about when you are around the Carrick with your coworkers getting some coffee. So I will go first. Mine is about a show that I binge-watched over the weekend. It's on HBO. It's called Big Little Lies.
Heard that was very good.
It was really, really good. It's only 7 episodes, so it's a great, like, I got nothing to do on a Saturday, watch the whole thing. It takes place in Monterey, California, but then a friend of mine who lives in Northern California told me that Monterey is completely not like that at all, so let's just say it's like a fictionalized version of Silicon Valley, sort of, but also on the coast. The Bay Area, yeah, like a really heavily, it takes place at this wealthy enclave of a town, and it centers on these like 4 or 5 families who all have a kid in first grade at this public school, but it's really exclusive because you can only live in this town, you know, if you can afford a house that's like $20 million and it's right on the beach. So it starts off as sort of it looks like maybe, oh, it's some kind of Real Housewives of the Bay Area kind of thing, because it's all these moms snapping at each other and sniping about this thing and that thing, whatever, and then it takes a really, really dark turn, and it's
love
great.
Dark turns.
Yes, it's a dark turn, and it's great. And the thing that I liked about it most was that one of the first graders is like impossibly hip. Like I'm sure they exist. I've never met a first grader this hip though. But she, you know, being a child of wealth, has her little iPhone, and it's hooked up to her mom's car in the Bluetooth way, and then also at their house they have, you know, you can turn on your speakers, and so she plays songs for every occasion. And so I found that someone put together a playlist on Spotify, and it's like impossibly cool, but it's a great playlist
for a first grader is putting together.
Well, a first grader is written by...
Yeah, I don't know why I was like just trying to picture a real life person.
Yeah,
this is,
no,
this is a fictional show.
I mean, the little girl who played this, she was great. I mean, she was really, really good.
Yeah.
I think child actors sometimes it's hard for them to do a really good job, but the little girl who played this character was great. But the music was just, it was so key to so much of it. So I really recommend it. It's on HBO. You can watch all 7 episodes now.
Cool.
And yeah, this playlist is on Spotify. It's pretty cool.
Thank you for not ruining the twist.
I would not do that. It was not hard to figure out, sort of, once you were sort of halfway through the season, like, what was going to happen. But it still was, you could kind of figure out what was going to happen, but not how.
Yeah,
or what happened. So, but I wouldn't want to spoil it, because that what would be the fun of that, so...
Thanks. Jim, anything to talk about?
So what I'm really fascinated in for the last like couple of weeks is the city of Boston has set up an open data portal, taking the hint from other cities that have done this. So they're putting out, they have like 119 data sets about information that they collect in various aspects of how the city works. And I think it's a great move. I wish more communities were doing this, because... you know, there are people who have expertise in data science who can glean all kinds of interesting things about the places that we live and find ways for everybody to do things better, more efficiently,
oh, yeah,
you know, in a safer way, find
right
disparities in how these services are provided to people. And they're running a contest for people to work with this data and figure out, you know, something interesting to say about it. And they're going to have the results online at the beginning of May.
Are you preparing a submission for the contest?
I'm playing around with stuff. I don't have any great ideas at the moment, but just in general.
When is that close?
There's going to be like a public event where they do presentations on these things. So they're taking reservations for slots up through this coming Monday. And then I think projects are due May 1st.
Gotcha.
First week in May.
That's pretty cool, though, because they do collect a lot of information about residents that, yeah, you're right, could be used to analyze anything. And they might not have all the people in City Hall to know how to play with that. So that's really cool.
Absolutely. So kudos to them. And I would love to see some of the cities and towns that we cover do more of this and start to put more of this information online, because you can really pick through it to find out some interesting stuff.
What are some of the examples, like beyond the obvious, what are some of the data sets available that you can play with?
So they have a few areas, kind of challenges that they're steering people toward to think about.
Yeah.
And one really concrete example to help understand how this can be beneficial is they're asking people to look at a huge data set of fires that have happened in Boston and try to come up with ways to make the city safer, or maybe figure out areas that might be at risk for fire in the future. So this is something that other communities have done after, in particular, the fire in Oakland, where people can come up with predictive models to say, okay, looking at all the fires that have broken out in the city, maybe we should be directing enforcement toward, you know, buildings of a certain age with so many occupants who haven't been inspected in X number of years or something like that.
Interesting.
Or maybe there's one of those things where it's like you have the circle around the fire station and it's the circle's together, and then there's that little spot that's farther away from either fire right. station that always gets underserved somehow, but no one really realizes it because it's such a tiny area. I could see that, yeah.
So they're super smart people in Boston who I'm sure could have a really positive public safety impact by looking at this.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to see what people come up with.
Yeah, totally.
So the plan is to publish the best best designed infographics and such.
I think even the worst will be available.
Oh, okay.
Excellent. So I think they're going to put everything up on a big kind of like showcase website.
Oh,
and
okay.
See what people came up with.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Pretty cool. I look forward to seeing that.
Yeah, that would be a good project for a mayor in the city, the biggest city in Metro West. It'd be a really good project for the mayor.
I would look forward to it.
Anyway, so I have been binging a podcast. It's called Song Exploder, and it's part of the Maximum Fun network of podcasts and shows and such. And it's a really cool premise. It's like, I listen to one for Bjork, there's one for Wilco, I listen to one for Converge, the Boston hardcore band. And what they do, or what the guy does, is he gets the recordings. Like, they're called stems, so you can pull out the guitar stem and just listen to the guitar track on this song, or just listen to the vocal track or the drum track, and he interlays those singled out tracks with the artist talking about what they were thinking about when they were making the song, what the song is about, sometimes like wonky stuff like how they got this specific guitar or drum tone. It's just the artist's voice in singled stems for like 10 minutes, and then they play the song. And cool. The guy who makes it will only say at the beginning, like, this is Bjork with her song Stone Milker off the 2015 whatever. And then he completely steps out of it and just, you know, he cuts the interview so that it's just the interviewee speaking and what he or she is talking about playing over it. And it's really cool. They have a bunch of good songs. He's done, like, it looks like over 100, 150 episodes.
That sounds great. Is there any, like, one instrument part that really surprised you when you heard it isolated and you said, wow, I didn't understand the contribution that, you know, this cowbell made to this?
Yeah, track. Yeah. There was so a song that was popular in, like, 2015-16 is called The Preston by Courtney Barnett, she's like a English singer-songwriter. There's this really weird lead thing that I thought was some sort of synth or organ, because it's like really, it oscillates really fast, and then they isolated it, and it's a guitar solo with like a glass slide, and the guy just shakes his hand really fast, does a vibrato effect with his hand, and the only effect on it is just a little bit of overdrive from the amp to make it sound a little crunchy, but otherwise it's just his hand making that bizarre noise, and it was like, oh, that's cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. And that song in particular, they did it live with, there's probably one guitar track, one drum track, one bass track, one vocal track, and then that. And it's like very stripped down and minimal. And to just like, I don't know, it was cool.
That's very cool. What's it called again?
Song Exploder.
Song Exploder.
Yeah, it's just really interesting to hear the creative process. I don't know. It does a better job breaking that down than anything I've ever listened to or read about music before it. So, yeah, it's cool. Check it out. The season's over, the rest
is fine, and I'm grow colder. Thanks for listening. This podcast was produced by Megan Kelly and Bill Shaner and was edited by Bill Shaner. Music was done by the band Born Without Bones. You can find us online at MetroWestDailyNews.com/podcast, and we're also on Twitter at MetroWestDaily. Please find us and rate us in the iTunes store. It would really help us get more ears on our podcast and would spread our audience wide. So thank you, and have a good one. We don't talk about-